According to Marijuana Business Daily, women make up nearly 27% of the executives in the cannabis industry. However, that number drops to only 5% when the woman is a person of color. The face of the cannabis industry, from cultivation to distribution, has largely been male-dominated. As the industry booms, the face behind the industry is changing. Coming up next, we'll hear from Kimberly Dillon, the African-American woman behind the marketing of Papa and Barkley, manufacturers of cannabis-infused wellness products. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. On the phone with me today is Kimberly Dillon, the African-American woman marketing executive of Papa and Barkley, promoting wellness from the soil to the oil. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So tell me about Papa and Barkley and how you came to be associated with this business.
Papa and Barkley is the number one wellness cannabis brand in the state of California, which also happens to be the largest market in the world based on our population size. So it's just really exciting to see the growth of this business. We make a number of products, including topicals and tinctures and patches, and we're really focusing on the wellness side of the plant. So one of our missions is to really unlock the potential of the plant to improve people's lives. So unlike what people might think of terms of stoner images or getting really high, we are really focused on pain management, and most of our products are non-psychoactive. I was really drawn to this category because I actually was not a smoker in college or in school. I like to say that DARE worked for me. I just never trust any type of any recreational drugs. It wasn't until I was in my 30s, actually, that I was really having huge problems with sleeping and insomnia and really driven by just anxiety and just burnout. It was actually my mother, who was in Colorado, who was hearing being exposed to legal cannabis, who said, literally, you need to chill out. Have you thought about cannabis? And I was thinking, what? My 7-year-old mother is telling me to try cannabis. And so I actually went to a dispensary in Venice Beach. It was such a shady and horrific process because I'm a good girl. So I just didn't. You know, I felt so uncomfortable, but I also got like the best sleep of my life for weeks, and it just allowed me to perform better at work. I was more present in my relationships. Everything sort of changed for me. And so I really thought like, hey, I'm a working professional, and this is such a healing plant for me. It is just being marketed in the wrong way. And wow. So I was really lucky to run into the team at Papa and Barkley. Our founder, Adam Grossman, is an amazing man who developed these products for his own father who was in hospice. And because of the product that he initially made in the crock pot of his house in Massachusetts, his dad was able to extend the quality of life and leave hospice. So our company is actually named after Papa and Barkley. So our founder's dad and the family dog, Barkley. And so it's just a really amazing sort of touching story about how all of us kind of came to it from like a caregiving perspective or from trying to heal our own lives.
Right. Now, there's something that you said that was quite intriguing to me. As an African-American woman, there's largely a stigma in the home, in the families, especially with our elders around marijuana and cannabis. And you said your 70-year-old mother introduced you to cannabis. My mother grew marijuana in 1985 in Los Angeles and made her tincture. My mother never smoked, never drank a day in her life, but she made her own tincture in 1985 and gave it to all of her church lady friends for their arthritis. And it's just amazing that our elderly mothers connected us to cannabis that way.
It's so fascinating because you've hit on 2 points. One, my mother did connect me to this plant and she definitely loves our products. She definitely has concerns about me like being in the industry and being very vocal about it. So there's two sides of the coin of, you know, there's this stigma, especially because African Americans go to prison 4 times as much as our Caucasian counterparts. even though Caucasians typically consume a little bit more than African Americans. So there's still a lot of stigma, right? My family's from the Deep South, and so I tell a line about, like, really pushing the healing powers of this plant, but also just sort of the shame or the concern that my parents and my family has about me working in this industry. For them, it's kind of like, oh, did you put a target on your back? Because they just know about the hypocrisy that sometimes comes from this industry, which leads me to another point. In working in this industry, I have found that the story of your mother rings true for a lot of different cultures, specifically Mexican Americans, especially in California, where they would see the cannabis in coconut oil or in an alcohol in mason jars in the basement, and it was this go-to tincture that healed all. And they didn't think about it in terms of recreation or like lighting a joint in the same way that your mother didn't. It was really a sort of a cure-all, an aid. And so we see that true in Chinese culture, in Mexican culture, and also in African-American culture. Actually, cannabis use became popular in the United States at the turn of the 20th century, the 1910s and 1920s, when Mexican immigrants brought it to the United States, and jazz singers like Cabbie Calloway, et cetera, started really embracing cannabis. So the history of cannabis is so interesting because it really was sort of proliferated through people of color and then demonized because of us as well.
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you the rest of that cannabis story from my mother. She met an abuela and just had a conversation with her, and she was talking about her aches and pains in her knees. And the abuela said, you need to get a cannabis plant and put it in alcohol. And my mom, being the good girl, like you said, being the good girl that she was, she went from nursery to nursery looking for a cannabis plant. And finally, someone said, lady, that's weed. You need to get a guy on the street, get some seeds, and grow it yourself. And that's what she did. And she grew a 6-7 foot tall tree in the middle of our backyard in South Los Angeles at the height of the drug wars. And she did a fine job of it. And I wish I had the gumption to question her about this, because I would have had that recipe. But she took it with her when she passed on.
But what a great visual that you, thank you for sharing that with me. I can only imagine the tree that grows in South LA.
Right. So you mentioned your background in being a good girl, no marijuana until you had problems sleeping. And now you're in this cannabis industry. It's largely a white male dominated industry. What challenges have you faced and how do you navigate them?
One of the things I should say is that, like, we have an insanely diverse company here at PNB. So it's interesting because in some ways I'm sort of insulated in the fact that if you looked at my marketing team, it's literally all walks of life and abilities and sexualities and ethnicities and ages. One of our brand ambassadors, I think, is in his 80s. So we have so many sort of unique viewpoints. So from a day-to-day perspective, I've been really blessed in that way. From a industry perspective is really where you sort of run into challenges. One that recently come up is that we were doing a photo shoot for a Mother's Day or a Father's Day sort of campaign around how do you talk to your elderly parents about cannabis? That's such an important discussion. And so we were looking for stock images, and all the stock images that came back from our agency was primarily Caucasian families. So I really sort of pushed on that, and the answer was like, there are no stock images that work for this campaign for diverse families. So even small things of like looking for photos to be more inclusive, you know, proved to be a challenge. And we had to do those a photo shoot to show different people interacting with the plant in different modalities that were people of color are of various ages. Because if you look to how it's being marketed, it is often beautiful, young, and Caucasian, you know, people. And it's not showing the abuelas are like all the different walks of life that can benefit from this plant. And it's just not being inclusive or representing the reality of who the cannabis consumer is. So that's one example. Two, when you're going to raise money or go to these conferences and trade shows, a lot of the panels are also just not diverse. And representation is not just a feel-good society thing. It's really a financial thing. It's really about, it makes good business sense to really speak authentically to your consumer and to really avoid a lot of pitfalls. Like, we've seen the fashion industry. For some reason, blackface was the theme of fashion this year.
Oh, my gosh. And it's not stopping.
Exactly. And what that says to me is that not only do they not have people at the table in these business meetings, but they don't, their vendor partners and everyone down the supply value chain, you know, weren't empowered, aren't work people of color. And I can only imagine it's costly to pull these products from market. You wasted people's time to develop the product. And also the social backlash isn't healthy for your business either. So representation isn't just to be equitable to society. It's like you want to speak to your consumers in the most authentic way, and your consumers aren't just one group of people. And you also want to avoid pitfalls like accidentally offending large groups of people. Well, I accidentally was me being super positive. But you don't want to offend swaths of people, you know, with something that could have been avoided if you had empowered people.
All it takes is a conversation. Or in some cases, maybe a tap on the shoulder and said, that might not be your best idea. So I get it. Wow. So you mentioned the financial component. African Americans or people of color in the cannabis industry, I'm sure it's largely their challenges around the capital that is required to start a cannabis industry legitimately. Am I right?
That's 100% true. I mean, I feel like Oakland tried or has a social equity program. There's been a lot of interesting efforts around social equity. At the end of the day, it does come down to access to capital. And so hopefully New York and Massachusetts and other states are taking a look at like what went wrong or how to optimize what happened in California as a model for the East Coast. I mean, I can't say her name correctly. I just know her Twitter handle, but the AOC, our youngest House of Representatives, correctly stated in Congress when asked about it, is like, are we compounding racial injustice around the communities that were impacted the most by the war on crimes? And now we're doubly hitting them in the sense that they are out of the market for cashing in on what's the green rush. And so I think part of it, too, is that stigma of what it's like to work in this industry beyond just the capital. It's about really how do we encourage people of color to be a part of this industry from entry level to mid level to executives to growers to farmers to VC, et cetera. We need to play at all levels of this game.
Right. And not only that, we need to have open conversations with our friends and our families and our networks, because that's how you remove the stigma. You know, oh, I'm not going to smoke that wacky tobacco, and removing the stigma of it being a drug and moving towards looking at cannabis as medicine for healing properties.
It's interesting because I was recently had a profile, I think, in Forbes magazine, and I was particularly proud of it. And I noticed that a lot of my friends who are not people of color, you know, there's a lot of congratulations, a lot of, oh, Kimberly, you're an early mover. Congrats on your success. And then from my own family, it was like, I can't believe you put your business out there. You really shouldn't be talking about this. And for what they saw was like a fear. They didn't see the opportunity. They didn't see the trailblazing. They didn't see the innovation. What they saw was the risk. And so that's the walk of life, you know, you have to play when you're in this space.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women on KHSU. My name is Lorna Bryant, and I'm speaking with Kimberly Dillon. the African-American woman behind the marketing of Papa and Barkley, manufacturers of cannabis-infused wellness products. So back to the stigma. You know, it's amazing. I'm sure folks who have demonized or they think ill of the cannabis industry, I'm sure they have medicine cabinets full of pharmaceutical drugs in their homes. I'm sure they have full bars in their homes. And those are things that have negative effects on our bodies. But cannabis has positive effects, and it's demonized.
You know, it's interesting because I think that consumers' attitudes are changing so rapidly. It's been amazing to watch. So I think about 60% of Americans are proof of legalization of cannabis. And what I've experienced is a lot of people just don't know the different modalities of cannabis, right? Mm-hmm. And that cannabis can often be non-psychoactive. So for a lot of people who are uninformed, they're thinking of someone getting super high by smoking a joint or a bong. And they're not necessarily thinking about lotions and topicals that can solve arthritis, about tinctures that can address epilepsy, about patches that can go after aches and pains and go after muscle recovery, improved sleep, and all these different ways that you can consume cannabis and coffee creamers and eye patches and scrubs. And there's just so many different ways that the plant can be used. And I think a lot of people are just unaware of that. Because one of the things we get a lot is when we do a lot of massages, especially in senior homes, and the seniors are like, oh, am I going to get high from this? And the answer is like, no, because this is a lotion. And so I think when people realize that there are healing benefits of the plant, and also there's a whole spectrum of non-psychoactive products, I've quickly seen the most stubborn person sort of change their mind. Even in our facilities in Eureka, I mean, we've had every government official you can imagine through our offices. We're very transparent. At events, I'll be right next to a sheriff's booth or a police booth, and they definitely come by and they're asking for samples. So I think where the stigma lies is still in our institutions and how we're thinking. Things like drug policies for employees, that's a really big concern around. You can be literally hopped up on opiates and go to work. Well, you can't necessarily use cannabis to solve arthritis and go to work because of a drug screen process. So I think our laws and our infrastructure is really what's demonizing the plant more than people per se. I think it's the misinformation that makes people scared. And I also think it's the infrastructure as it relates to drug testing or banking or those types of things that really play with people's lives, that they avoid the discussion of plant entirely.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. As I said, with conversation, people become educated. I recall a situation where a cousin of mine asked me if I had some drugs because she had some back pain. She was looking for like codeine or something. And this is a preacher's wife. And I said, no, but I have a cannabis salve and I don't want any weed. And I said, it is not weed. It is something you rub on your skin and it will alleviate the pain. She excused herself, put some on, and maybe 5 minutes later, mid-sentence, she was talking to me and she said, oh, that stuff is good. What happened? And it just opened her eyes. And I told her, this is not marijuana in the sense that you're thinking of. This is medicinal effects and you're not going to get high. And that little conversation changed her mind. And she freely took the cannabis salve home with her husband. She had concerns initially about letting her husband know that she had cannabis, but he's okay with it now because it
is. I bet he wanted a massage too.
Yeah. And it smells good when they're coconut based. Yeah. It's a conversation. It's important. It is key to break that stigma, especially in the Black family dynamic. Absolutely.
100%.
So you talked about Eureka a little bit. Your manufacturing business is based in Eureka, California.
Yes.
And there's a new plant that will be built. I think you just signed escrow or you just completed escrow on a larger manufacturing site. Will that be for all CBD products, or is there an opportunity, or are you only focusing on health and wellness and not going into the recreational part of the business?
So it will be to manufacture our cannabis products as we do now, which is a ratio of CBD and THC. I think that they're figuring out what exactly the space might actually be leveraged for. I know that there's discussions that it might be for pick and pack, but it's really to provide more manufacturing opportunities in Eureka. We're really committed to that area. Really, some of the best cannabis is grown from the world in Humboldt. We work with so many small farmers in that area. And so really having more of the production processes in Eureka was important to us. We've had explosive growth in the last 18 months where we just needed more space to actually make our products. So really it's just going to help us grow. And I think it really just shows our commitment to Eureka and the farmers there. We've done a lot of work to be part of the community. I think we're one of the top employers there. And Eureka is just a really special place, as is Humboldt in general.
So do you find difficulty, or does Papa and Barkley find it difficult to find a grower who exclusively grows high CBD strains?
CBD is an interesting one because it's sort of like exploded. And so there is a constant sort of hunt for these types of strains and these cultivars. I mean, I think what's important for us, not just CBD, but any type of cultivar out there, is really making sure we understand their growing practices, because it really does start from the soil all the way to the oil, as they say in the industry. Mm-hmm. So really working with farmers that are trying to grow as organically as possible, even though we can't say organic, that it's regenerative practices, that they're not using chemicals on their plants, that they're really providing the best input. Because there's constant scares around pesticides and metals for people who just have shady growing practices. So for us, regardless of the ratio of the strain, we're really looking for sustainable, green farming practices. And even beyond that, we test our products from flower, then we test them when we make our infusions, and we test our finished goods, because we're really obsessive about making sure that we provide clean products to our consumers. So I think the focus is really more on farmers who share that vision, more than any one particular strain per se.
So are the federal laws different in the around cannabis based on the percentage of CBD versus THC?
Yes. So the Farm Bill recently was passed, I think, in December of last year. There's cannabis, and then there's also known as what's hemp. Hemp is defined as having less than 0.03% content of THC, which is one of the cannabinoids of the plant. THC is also a cannabinoid. There are over 100 cannabinoids. So as a country, we really only talk about two of them. And so hemp is defined as one that has 0.03% THC content, but they are really one plant. Mm-hmm. And that is the definition federally, but that's even the definition that's industry-wide and even on the state level. And it's interesting, right, because there's a lot of, like I mentioned, there's over 100 cannabinoids. So to really focus on just these two is just an interesting choice.
Right. So earlier you mentioned that the landscape of your business, it sounds like it's kind of a bubble because everyone is covered. It's very diverse. I noticed that the co-founder is also a person of color as well.
Yeah, Guy.
Oh, it's Guy. Okay, so
it's Guy Rocourt, and he is our chief products officer. He actually is the one who's professionalized that original crock pot formula. He makes all of our products. He came up actually through being a personal assistant for Montel Williams, who was suffering with MS. And so he has decades of experience of working with the plant and doing different tinctures for numbers of people in LA. And so really just is a healer. He came up through the Navy, and he is the most passionate man that I've ever met. Really concerned around social justice issues, and really is the proponent about doing the right thing, making sure that we're always thinking about things from an equitable perspective, what we will support and won't support on a marketing side. And so his voice, he's sort of like the inspiration lead for the whole company. And so it is interesting how diverse we are.
I think I've actually seen him driving around town in a Papa and Barkley Jeep here and there.
He has one. Yes, yes.
When you see a person of color with long, beautiful locks, I think that's what I saw, and connection to a cannabis business, kind of take note. So maybe next time I see him, I'll introduce myself to him.
Oh, you should. He would love that.
Yes. So my final question to you, what is your advice for women hoping to connect with the cannabis industry?
Well, one is definitely do it, because our voices need to be heard, especially as it relates to product development and developing products that women want to buy. But you don't also have to touch the plant. There's so many things that this industry needs. So don't feel as if, oh, I can't grow or I don't know how to make a product. I mean, there's needs for financial services and for lawyers and for compliance and all spectrums of needs. This is an industry that literally started a year ago that's worth hundreds of billions of dollars. There is a lot of space for people to enter. Don't be intimidated by the news, because right now it's very noisy, right? It is still very much the beginning. We are at step zero of a very long game. It is not over. And I think I would, you know, touch to a point that you mentioned a lot about having conversations and being open to the plant and talking about investment opportunities or investment circles or learning about maybe you don't want to be in the industry, but you want to invest in some cannabis stocks, or maybe you want to start an angel fund. There's so many ways that we can come together to enter this market. Make sure you buy from who you want to buy from and be a conscious consumer. Mm. Ultimately, I would say don't be intimidated. Just do it.
I love it. I read somewhere that you are the marketing maven of Mary Jane. And I think you're so much more than just that. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
It has been amazing as well. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Lorna Bryant. I've been speaking with Kimberly Dillon of Papa and Barkley about women of color in the cannabis industry. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's editor, Megan Martin, and our entire Through the Eyes of Women team. You can listen to this show again at any time at Through the Eyes of Women's blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again at 1:30 next Monday on KHSU.